whatever Jesus proclaims is the absolute truth. And whether we agree with it or not, or like it or not, that is the case. So we are salt. The moment we become a disciple of Jesus, we become salt. As he said, you are the salt of the earth. But Jesus makes it very clear that there are two types of salt. There is a salt that is tasteless. There is a salt that has no savor. There is a salt that doesn't have any ability to be detected. And there is a salt that is tasted, that is savoring, and that is making a difference wherever it goes. And so we have to ask ourselves, I think the way that Jesus puts this is kind of interesting for all of us, because we are the salt. But the question is, are we good salt or bad salt? And that's the issue of the lesson this morning, and that's what we want to talk about, because it's very important that we determine whether we have a character, a commitment, and an ability to reach out to other people in order that our salt might save them. And this is what the lesson is going to be about, because I know we all have a general idea of what salt is and what salt does, but we have two other passages in the Gospels, one in Luke and one in Mark. I'm going to spend a lot of time on Luke this morning, just a few minutes on Mark, and then we'll make some applications, because it's crucial. We are salt. We don't have any choice about it. We don't have any options with it. It's not whether we want to be salt or not. It's whether or not the salt that we are is actually accomplishing anything, or it is not accomplishing anything. Now, in Luke chapter 14, we have a section of Scripture where Jesus clearly defines and explains what salt is as he describes it. So he starts in verse 33 of Luke chapter 14, and then we're going to go back up, because this is a sermon. We're looking at the conclusion of the sermon, but we want to look at the main points of the sermon, because when we see the term "so likewise," you're not supposed to start there. So likewise means in exactly the way that I've just finished talking about, which is two parables and a direct statement of command. Then he says, "So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple." Salt is good. But if the salt has lost its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor for the dunghill, but men throw it out. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Now, Peter said something similar. Peter said, if we escape the corruption in the world, and we are again entangled therein, the last state is worse than the first. And then he makes a statement you would never think could be possible. He says it would be better for them to have never heard the gospel than to hear it and turn from it. Now, that's what Jesus is describing here. Once you become a Christian and you become salt, if you go back into the world, there's no place for you. Jesus said you become absolutely worthless. The worst, that state is worse than the first. It would have been better for you never to have known than to turn from it. So what exactly is Jesus describing here? Well, first of all, salt is linked to forsaking all. You see that in verse 33. So likewise. Now, these "so likewises" are going to be important, because they're going to explain what Jesus' expectations of forsaking all is about. Because that's a relative term. Forsaking all means different things to different people. Some of us forsake all by giving up a few of the sins that we were committing before we became a Christian, but then virtually living the same life after we become a Christian. Other people forsake all by sacrificing maybe 10 times more than the first person. They give up many, many things. But what Jesus is after here, and we'll see what it is here in a few moments. But first of all, salt is linked to forsaking all. We can't define salt and what it does, Jesus does. Jesus did that for us. If we have not forsaken all and continued to forsake all, it's easy to sell all you have to buy the field, and then as soon as you become a Christian, to start buying back what you sold again. By that I mean you give up your lying, but you start lying again. You give up your sinful practices, but you start them up again. You start holding fast the scriptures and teaching people, but over time you quit talking to people about the Lord. And so you forsake all, but you don't continue. And that means the salt is losing its savoring ability, because no one can tell anymore that you're a Christian. No one can tell, because your deeds, your words, there's no salt within them. In his own words, Jesus said, as his disciples, we're fit for nothing. We certainly can't be set forth. If you could just be a Christian like that person, most people are going to say, I wouldn't go to your church because so-and-so is a member of your church, and if that's the way you believe about the Christian religion, I don't want any part of it. I've heard that before, and many of you have heard that before. I don't want to be that person. I've heard people talk about someone else whose salt had lost its savor and who were actually a distraction, actually a problem for the people of the Lord. And so, in his own words, we are fit for nothing. And then look at his last statement. Do you have any ears? You better be listening. This is critical. This isn't something we can afford to ignore. This is going to come back to us for the reasons that we're going to see in the two parables we're about to look at and in the initial statements that Jesus makes. But I want us to see that salt is definitely linked. There's no way that salt is a new paragraph or a new subject or a new issue. He is saying, so likewise, those of you who do not forsake all can't be my disciple. Salt is good, but if it has lost its flavor, clearly if you are not forsaking all, you've lost your flavor. Great multitudes. This is the beginning of the sermon. This is back up in verse 25. We were reading verse 33. Now we're reading verse 25. Great multitudes went with him. And he turned and said to them. So this is a sermon to multitudes. Hundreds, maybe thousands of people are listening to this. And he's telling them in verse 26, if anyone, well, that's pretty self-explanatory. Anyone means everyone. It means every class, every kind, people in the first century, people in the 20th century, people in America, Jews, Gentiles, anyone comes to me, wants to be a disciple, wants to follow after me, wants to be a part of me, and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Now that gives us, so likewise, all of you who do not forsake all that he has, can't be my disciple. Great multitudes heard this. I'm sure several or more said, this is a hard saying, who can hear it? Hate your mother and father? Jesus wants me to hate my mother and father? He wants me to hate my wife, my children, my family, my brothers and sisters, and he wants me to hate my own life. And he says, if I don't do that, I can't be a disciple. Can't be a disciple. Now we can call ourselves disciples, but you see, that's the difference between being a disciple, thinking we're a disciple, and Jesus owning us as a disciple. If we come before him on the judgment day and our discipleship does not measure up to Jesus' expectations, we all know what's going to happen. We know that he's going to say, depart. You did not measure up to my standards. Somebody came and asked him once, Lord, are there many who are saved? And Jesus said, strive to enter in by the narrow gate, for many will strive to enter, but not be able to. Now, we like to make that a difference between the Church of Christ and the doctrines in the Church of Christ and the teachings that we hold regarding the Lord's Supper and worship and baptism and the rest of the denominations. But that's not what he's talking about there. He's talking about people who are doing what he tells them to do in every realm and people who aren't. So this is just as much for, quote, the Church of Christ as it is for other people. Don't make the mistake of not making this personal, because we are a member of the Lord's church. It is the people who are in the kingdom that he's talking about here. It is the people who are the salt that he's talking about here. This is for me. This is for you. So what's he asking for here? Well, he's saying whenever mom and dad put themselves in a position where you have to choose between me, Jesus, and them, you have to hate them. Don't you love me? I've heard my mother say that when she wanted me to do something on the first day of the week. Don't you care about us? Yeah, I care about you, but I care about Jesus more. Yeah, but it looks like you don't love us. It looks like you hate us, the way you're treating us, the way you're acting, the way you're talking to us. You keep telling us we're wrong. You keep pointing out things that we're doing that are wrong. You won't go with us when we do certain things. You won't come to our home if we're drinking or if we're having a party. What's wrong? That's what Jesus is talking about here. I don't care if it's your mother or father. I don't care if it's your wife or children. I don't care if it's your brothers or sisters. Jesus says, if you put them beyond or above me, you're not my disciple. That's his words. Those are not my words. I didn't say this. I didn't write this. I wasn't there. This is something that Jesus said. And I've got to grapple with it. I've got to wrestle with it. How does this verse apply to me? When I first became a Christian, did I do this? Or did I compromise? Oh, okay, Mom, I'm going to miss services tonight so that I can come to your dinner. They'll understand. Okay, boss, I know that you have this responsibility and I'm going to sacrifice. I'm going to tell a lie for you, or I'm going to cheat somebody for you, or I'm going to do something for you. What kind of salt is that, brethren? What kind of savor does that leave when we compromise our convictions in the presence of someone else, whether it's a mother or father, whether it's a wife or children, whether it's brothers or sisters, or anything else in our life, up to and including our life? That's salt. That's the salt that Jesus is speaking of. The savor of putting him first. The savor of making a sacrifice and astounding the people who are around you that you would have made that choice. When we find ourselves in a situation where we have to give up something for Jesus, that's salt. When we choose not to give it up, we lost that chance. We didn't savor. We did not have the savor that we should have had. Whoever does not bear his cross, it's going to hurt. There was only one purpose for the cross of Jesus Christ in the first century, and it wasn't a beautiful necklace that we could all wear and say, oh, I'm a Christian. It was an instrument of death. The cross that Jesus wants us to bear is the cross where we put to death our desire to put our mother and father first, or our husband and wife first, or anyone else first. Now again, these are not my words. I'm only faithfully telling us what Jesus told that great multitude and what he wants me to tell you, what he wants me to say. So, as we look at these things, there is salt and conviction. Nothing is higher than Jesus. Nothing. Not my life, my money, my free time, my family, my friends. If Jesus has something I need to do and I have to sacrifice those things, salt demands that I do it. Tastelessness occurs if I don't. So salt and conviction. Salt and sacrifice if I have to lose all. Salt and priorities. He wants to be first. Salt and commitment. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do the things that I say? Luke 6:46. You think we're not? You think that the Lord isn't going to say that to us over something we did or didn't do that we should have done? This is a powerful set of scriptures, and it's something for us not to look back. Well, I remember all the sacrifices I made when I first became a Christian. Well, what did the Hebrew writer tell the Hebrews? Don't throw away. You did all of this, but now you're in danger of losing it all because you're compromising. You're losing your salt. You're losing your commitment. And brethren, in our world today, it is easy for that to happen. Because the evil companionship of the 30s and 40s and the evil companionship of our period today is very different. Very different indeed. It's more powerful, it's more pervasive, and it's more universal. There is nothing in the scriptures that people today aren't doubting. Back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, there were many absolutes that you didn't even have to worry about. If you said them, everybody would nod their head. Yeah, that's right. Homosexuality is a vice. So is drugs. So is alcohol. So is prostitution. So is pornography. It's a vice. It's evil. It's wicked. Not today. Many Christians today would sit there and not say anything because they know if they say something, it's going to create a battle. But Jesus said, I want you to start that battle. I want you to do that. Because if we compromise, our salt is losing its savor. Now, I'm not talking about those situations where you just can't come up with an answer quick enough. I've had many times like that where I look back on a chance encounter, a few-minute encounter, and I think to myself, I didn't compromise, but I didn't do as much as I could have done. And I ask for forgiveness for that because that's not right. But it happens. We're not brilliant all the time. We don't always have the right words. We don't always know exactly what we should say in certain circumstances, and the opportunity goes by. But that's not what Jesus is referring to here. He's referring to people who won't. Not that they don't know how. They won't. They're not interested in it. Now, Jesus gave two parables to explain the nature of this salt. First of all, which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost? All right. Now, this is something I learned about 5 years into preaching because I got weary of baptizing people and then having to withdraw from them the same year because they didn't know what they were getting into. They didn't sit down and count the cost because they didn't realize. They thought Church of Christ is just another denomination. It doesn't have the same responsibility. We were demanding that they attend services faithfully. Many denominations don't demand that. We were demanding that they couldn't drink, they couldn't dance, they couldn't wear immodest apparel. We were demanding things they weren't expecting. So I developed a final class before I would baptize them. I would go through and show them the cost. Here's what we stand for. And that's one of the things I like about this congregation. Before someone can place membership, we want to sit down and talk to them. We want them to know what they're getting into. And we want them to understand, if we accept you as a member and you won't do these things, we are obligated to withdraw from you because God commanded, withdraw from every brother who walks disorderly and not according to the traditions which you learn from us. That's another area of salt. We're trying to savor. We're trying to keep all the commandments of Jesus, even the ones that nobody likes, even the ones that stand out as being, wow, you people are very committed and convicted. Yes, we are. Thank you. You're very judgmental. Well, I don't see it that way. I just see it as I'm doing what the Lord told me to do. You can say that that's what persecution is. So, which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? And I hope you did that. I hope every one of us here sat down and counted that cost before we became a Christian. You know, the good confession, I believe Jesus is Lord. I believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. You really? Does that mean you'll do what he says? All that he says? Even the things of the world? Remember, I've just finished a series of bulletin articles on the section of the Sermon on the Mount, you have heard that it was said, but I say. And most of those areas are just as problematic today as they were at that time. You have heard that it was said, don't commit adultery. Anything else is fine. But I say to you, if you ever look at a woman to lust after her, you've already committed adultery. Really? You mean I have to repent if I even look? If I even feel the slightest interest? Yeah. You ready to count that cost? You ready to pay that price? Because, as Peter said, it would be better not to hear, be better not to obey, than to obey and turn from it. You're salt without savor, you're worthless, you're good for nothing, you're going to be cast out. Again, I don't particularly like these words. They hit me as hard as they do you. I think I mentioned earlier in my Bible class, I was telling my wife on the way here, I got hit really hard. In the class on Wednesday night, the bulletin article I wrote, the Bible class this morning, and this sermon, I just was reeling. And she said, oh, I'm glad, because that means we're going to hear some good things today about how we should be doing better. Well, I don't know that all of you would feel that way. I'm not sure that all of you would say, oh boy, Alan's got a zinger today. I'm really happy about this. But I appreciate her. She's very humble. Lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see begin to mock him. Now the world isn't going to mock you. But Jesus is. The world's going to welcome you back if you go back to the world. They're going to say, ah, we do that. We knew you couldn't do it. I remember a comment one of my friends made about maybe 6 weeks in. They said, we knew you couldn't hold on to this. And that really stung. Because I'd given in to a slight, well, I won't say slight, never mind. You don't want to hear what I did 6 weeks into being a gospel, or obeying the gospel. A week later, I was up studying to be a preacher, and I'd gotten rid of all those friends and never went back to them. But that was a stinging thing. We knew you couldn't do this. We knew this wasn't sincere. Come on back. Be one of us again. That hurt. But the person mocking is going to be the Lord. Who's going to say, you called me Lord. You accepted my blood. You wanted eternal life. You made a covenant with me. You made a commitment. And you broke it. This man began to build and was not able to finish. So, the point of the parable, Jesus demands all, and I hope you knew it before you obeyed the gospel. Because then you could do what Jesus said here. But if not, it's time to do it now. Time to do it now. To sit down and add it all up. Here's what Jesus demands of me, and I'm not paying the price. Now, do I want to be mocked? Or do I want to hold fast? If we can't complete what we started, we're just like this man. He committed the resources, spent the money, but it was only a waste of his time and money. And many people who become Christians, it was a waste of the blood of Christ. How did the Hebrew writer put it? They've trodden underfoot the Son of God and counted the blood of the covenant with which they were sanctified an unholy thing, and they have done despite to the Holy Spirit. Once we make the commitment, it's going to be a serious problem if we don't keep it. Next parable. What king going to war against another king does not first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? We're the first king. And God, or Jesus, is the other king. And there's a battle. And one side's going to win, one side's going to lose. So which king going to war? We're in war. You want to be on the winning side or losing side? That's what Jesus is asking here. And if you know you're on the losing side, you better make conditions of peace. If you can't win, and you can't, Or else, verse 32, while the other is still a great way off, don't wait till the day before you die. Get this done. He sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if it loses its savor. So these two parables, counting the cost, paying the price. You're in a battle for your soul, and you can't win. So you better find out what the conditions of peace are. And Jesus has given the conditions of peace. So the war is for our soul. These are the conditions of peace. We have to forsake all that we have because we can't win. You can't rewrite the conditions of peace. Nations try to do that all the time, and they go back to war. When you sign a truce, that means you keep all the conditions. If you don't keep the conditions, you're going to go back to war again. And that's what Jesus is saying here. So, some of the obvious conclusions, salt and genuine discipleship are linked. Obviously, if I'm not a genuine disciple, how can I savor anything? How can anybody know that this is what it's all about? How can I be persecuted under righteousness if nobody ever sees the righteousness? Salt and genuine discipleship are linked. If we have not counted the cost, we are not his disciples, and the salt has no savor. So we've all got some things to think about regarding our relationship with our friends and our co-workers and our families, because this is where the rubber meets the road for a Christian, is the influence he has on other people. If people don't know you're a Christian, never told them. They don't know you're a Christian, and you've never stood up. You laugh at their jokes, even if they're vile. When they ask you to do things that are unethical or immoral, you do them. When they start talking about their vile activities that they involve themselves in, you don't leave. There's no salt there. There's no salt there, brethren. Let's be honest with ourselves. People need to know you're a Christian. Don't hide your light under a bushel basket. Your salt has no savor unless they know that you're a Christian. There's a direct tie between the cost to build that tower, the cost of discipleship. It's steep. What did Paul say? I had to suffer the loss of all things. And now I consider them refuse. And if you want someone who savored, Paul savored everywhere he went. They knew he was a Christian. Our last verse. We're either a savor of death unto death, which is why they hate us and persecute us, or we're a savor of life unto life because we're being a good example and we're helping other people along the way. So there's a direct tie between that cost. When we're not paying the cost, our salt has lost its savor. And that's what you have to ask yourself. Has my salt? Am I a savorless Christian? Can no one tell? And I'm not making any sacrifices or doing any of these things. There's also a direct link between the king who can't win and each disciple. Because that's me. I can't win this battle. I can't go against God. You think you could come out of that battle? I'm going to go before God and I'm going to straighten him out. Good luck. Wisdom of God. As Paul put it, foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. His weakest moment, the most foolish thing he ever did. You're not going to win. So you better find out what the conditions of peace are, and we know what they are. Because we lost that battle a long time ago, so we have to seek his conditions of peace, and when we meet those conditions, we will have, and that's the question, did you? Have you? Are you? Have you continued? Have we forsaken all that we have? If he condemns it, I'm not there. If he sees it as evil, I don't participate. Man, that hurts sometimes. Can't go see this movie. Can't watch this particular television show because I know the Lord wouldn't approve of it. Lot's soul was vexed. I'm going to borrow from the next point in the sermon. Lot's soul was vexed. We're going to sit down and watch it for our entertainment and laugh and enjoy ourselves and think that the Lord thinks that we're salt. That's forsaking all that we have. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, thanks be to God who always leads us in triumph in Christ and through us diffuses the fragrance of his knowledge in every place. Now, this is different than salt, but it's the same concept. This is a fragrance or an aroma. For we are to God the fragrance of Christ among those who are being saved and among those who are perishing. We're the savor of Christ. In other words, we smell, taste, and look just like Jesus. We are little Jesus. Little Jesus is running around preaching the same thing he preached, teaching the same thing he taught, taking the same stands he took, being the same person he was, living the same life he lived. To the one we are an aroma of death, leading to death. Because that's what we're teaching people. You're going to die, you're going to lose your soul, there is an eternal hell. We're a stench to the world, no doubt about it. That's why the darkness hates the light, doesn't want to come to the light, and that's why we sometimes have the hardest time sitting around the lunch table at lunchtime at work, and they're talking about all these things, and we're going to give that stench of death. We're going to tell these people, you know, if you do that, God's going to condemn you. And you say, well, that's pretty harsh. Well, you could probably word it nicer. As I say, you got to try to figure out, we can speak the truth in love, but we have to speak the truth. To the other, an aroma of life, leading to life. Now, that's what I am today for some of you. I'm sure I'm a stench to some of you from time to time. I'm sure that that Alan, his sermons stink. Ever think that? And maybe they do for a legitimate reason. But I'm saying, if I'm preaching the truth and you don't like it, then I'm an aroma of death leading to death. If I preach the truth and you like it, then I'm an aroma of life leading to life. Jesus was an aroma of death leading to death to the Pharisees and the vast majority of the Jewish nation. He was an aroma of life leading to life to his apostles and disciples. And on the judgment day, it's going to all come true, everything he said. And we will have everlasting life. So, if we compromise, clearly the fragrance changes. Truly, if we hate father and mother and carry our cross and deny ourselves, we have an aroma. And they can smell it. My folks smelled it. They knew exactly what it was. They didn't like it. But you know, after 40 years, they were finally baptized, and I have some hope that I might see them again after I die. But it was deep cost, because they were very worldly people. And they didn't like the change. They went to England. 6 weeks later, I was a Christian on my way to become a preacher. They couldn't believe it. They didn't like it. Some of you have similar stories that you can tell. Now, I don't have the time to go to Mark. In Mark, I'm just going to refer it to you. You can look at it later. But in Mark, he uses the, if your hand causes you to stumble, if your foot causes you to stumble, if your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out and cast it far from you, because it is better for one of your members to perish than for your entire body to be cast into hell, where the worm doesn't die and the flame is not quenched. Now, I'm quoting Jesus directly here. And then he says, salt is good, but if it loses its savor, if you won't cut off your hand, if you won't cut off your foot, what's your smell? People see you out there drinking. What kind of a fragrance is that for a Christian? Or they see you out there going to an R-rated movie that's just vile, and they say, is that what Christians do? You know, we have a light. We can't hide it. We have an aroma. We have a fragrance. We have a savor. But Jesus said, you know something? You are the salt of the earth if you're my disciple. But there's two kinds of disciples, and you have to ask yourself, and I have to ask myself, what kind of a savor? People who know me. I tell everyone almost immediately I'm a preacher. It's easier than saying I'm a Christian, because it gives them a clear understanding. And then if they have any questions or they want to know anything, they can ask. I'm just going to hit this real quickly because I want us all to think about it. Abraham and God are in a conversation. You know the conversation. If you can find 50 righteous people in Sodom, will that be enough salt, enough preservative value for you to spare Sodom? And God says, yes, I'll save it for 50. Then he went to 45, then to 40, then to 30, then to 20, and he stopped at 10. He should have gone down to 1, because I think that's all there was. His wife turned into a pillar of salt. His two daughters got him drunk and slept with him. Doesn't give us a real clear picture that the wife or the daughters had any salt or savor to them. But Lot did. Lot did. In Genesis chapter 19, when those angels came into his home, he went out to dissuade the men from their evil conduct, and they said, "You've been a judge of us since the day you got here. Now we're going to do worse to you than we were to them." But let's read 2 Peter. I don't have it written here. I'm going to take just a couple extra minutes. 2 Peter chapter 2. Because I want us to think about this. This reminds me of that passage in Ezekiel where God says, "I'm going to destroy the people in Jerusalem. I'm going to kill every man, woman, and child." But he tells the one man with an inkhorn, "I want you to go out and I want you to put a mark on the foreheads of everyone who sighs and cries over the abominations." That's all. He doesn't even ask for more than that. They sigh and cry over the abominations. Well, as we look at Lot, we see exactly what God was wanting. In 2 Peter chapter 2, let's just read verse 7. "Delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked." Now, these are strong terms. He was oppressed. He was vexed. He was gritting his teeth because he saw their conduct as filthy. What about us? We see that same conduct all around us. Do we see it as filthy, or have we compromised a little bit? Well, "Delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man, dwelling among them, tormented his righteous soul from day to day, seeing and hearing their lawless deeds." Brethren, when was your soul last tormented? When did you read something and just thought to yourself, "I can't believe the wickedness of this world"? How many times have we said to God, like Habakkuk, "Lord, how long before you're going to put a stop to this? Lawlessness is everywhere. I'm so disgusted. There's days where I don't even want to look at the news. I read the first line and I say, I can't handle this today because I'm so vexed. I'm so disgusted that I live in a wonderful country that has come to this." How about you? We have any salt? If God said, "Go on to America and put a mark on the forehead of everyone who sighs and cries over the abominations done in America," like Lot, you going to get that mark? How much do we swallow? How much worldliness can we endure? "Tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds." And then he says this, and this is going to be our concluding thought. "Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and reserve the unjust unto punishment." And brethren, he knows whether you are godly or you are unjust. And I hope you know. And so as we now pick up our song of invitation, I think there's some more slides, but I'm going to stop there. Need to make any changes? About that salt. What kind of a person are you? What kind of a person were you when you first became a Christian versus the kind of person you are now? Are you more tolerant? And is the more tolerance because you're more loving, but you're trying to preach and teach them? Or because you've just learned that we need to go along to get along? There's no salt. There has to be salt. People can't live with you, near you, by you, and not know who you are and what you stand for. So as we prepare now to sing the song of encouragement, we go to another figure, which is the light of the world. And everything we said about salt also applies to light. And so if there's any changes you need to make, I would urge you to make a commitment right now to make those changes. Maybe you don't need to come forward this morning. You just need to say, I'm not going to be like this anymore because I'm the salt of the earth, but I'm not savoring anything right now. And I need to make some serious changes in the way that I conduct my life and the sacrifices that I make and the commitments that I've made and priorities to put Jesus first. If we can help you in any way, maybe you'd like to be baptized today and become a Christian. Maybe you need to come forward and confess your sins and make a decision not to be like this anymore. Whatever we can do to help you, would you please let us know while we together stand and sing?